Blog Talk Radio.
Five Lincoln 103, five Lincoln 102, Lincoln 103 and 102.
Sunday 241 parking circuit, section 14.
Henry 8, Henry 9, respond to gate 437 Bravo for your dignitary detail. 3K911 unattended 400 lower level near Terrafill 4 black bag. GTA in progress 401 parking structure, section 4 boy.
Responding to 401 parking structure, section 1 boy.
415 passenger onboard aircraft.
Control 2 Franklin and Brown.
484 suspect, female, Hispanic, 28 years of age. No further.
Control, high frame 401 is a route.
Hey, good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition, live edition of the Private Officer Talk Radio Network on this Wednesday, July the 14th, 2010. Glad to have you with us tonight, wherever you are, whether it's across the street, across the country, or around the world. We're just glad that you're here, and sit back and relax, enjoy yourself on this muggy, steamy, hot July night, just another typical southern night here in the metro. I'm Rick McCann. I'm your host for the radio program. I'm the founder and CEO of Private Officer International. We certainly have a lot to talk about, as always, and we're just glad to have you here listening. We definitely want you to call. We had a number of callers the last week after the show. Don't wait that long. Call while we're on the air. This is a two-hour program, so you've got plenty of time to call. You can call me now, in fact. The area code is 347-426-3807. If you want to say something, ask a question, as they say, hit me up now, baby. No, hit me. You can call in right now at area code 347-426-3807. We have a lot to talk about, but I'll be more than happy to take a few calls from you, answer any questions about the association, about the chapters, about what's going on in the world of Private Officer International. Also, if you want to send us an email while we're on the air, you can do that as well. It's very simple. Send an email to radio@privateofficer.com. radio@privateofficer.com. I will be glad to read any newsworthy items to the listeners. If you want to announce any type of training that you're having, promotions, any type of recognition, we'll be glad to make the public aware of that. We have a lot of listeners, as we've said many times, not only here, but around the world. And in fact, you know, I just learned something new today. I'm sure that you've heard this said many times. You learn something new every day. But I learned two things actually new today, and I'll share them with you. And then you can use it to win yourself a little bet with your friends, relatives, and cohorts. But there are 24 time zones in the world, 24. And believe it or not, Russia has 9 different time zones. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? Russia? Come on. But yeah, it's true. There are 24 time zones in the world, and Russia has 9. Now, I hate to say this. I hate to admit it because I'm a non-drinker. But I got that information from a beer commercial. driving down the interstate, wasting my time flipping through the radio channels, and they were talking about this on a commercial, and I looked it up, and it's true. There are 24 time zones in this world, and there are 9 time zones in Russia. So there's some tidbit, some news that you'll probably never use, but you might be able to use it to win yourself a bet with one of your friends, coworkers. If you're interested, you can call me and ask me any questions or get involved with the lot that's going on. You may be interested in the chapters. Call us now, area code 347-426-3807, because I've got a lot of other stuff to do tonight, and we're going to move on rather rapidly. But, well, I thought I would share that piece of interesting news with you. I'm always looking for news that is unusual, news that, you know, most people don't know, wouldn't know, and probably have no use for. I'm always looking for tidbits, and it's just very interesting to know there's so much out there, really, to know about this world that we live in. But there's some information for you to share with some others. I've got some urgent news I want to share with you right away tonight, and if you're listening from Colorado or Ohio, listen up. If you're listening to me live or via podcast later in the night or tomorrow sometime, and this information is for you if you are in Colorado or Ohio, or if you just want to be involved. If you are in Colorado, we need some assistance in the Greeley, Colorado area to assist a mall security officer, Tony Fletcher, who lost his wife over the weekend while she was shopping at the mall with their child, and he was on duty at the mall protecting and serving. A vehicle at a high rate of speed crashed through a plate glass window of the mall, running over a worker of the store and killing the worker and the security officer's wife. Kimberly Fletcher, age 32, was killed on the scene, and a worker at a vision store, eyeglass store, was also killed. And police are still investigating. They don't know if this was a medical condition. They say blood was drawn. There was no drugs or alcohol. A toxicology report says it was clean. So at this point, they don't know if the 19-year-old driver had a medical condition or if he meant to recklessly drive into the mall. But if you are in Denver, Colorado Springs, Greeley, or any place in Colorado, I'd like for you to reach out. This young security officer, 31 years old, is employed at the Greeley Mall. I'd like for you to reach out and help him out. Hello, caller, you're on the air. Well, he was, but he's not. So if you are in the Greeley area, Greeley, Colorado, or Denver, or Colorado Springs, contact the Greeley Mall Management Office or the Mall Security Director and see what you can do to help them out. Send them a card, at least. Make some contact. Reach out to the security officer. We have made our attempts and will continue to. I understand, of course, he has taken some time off. But still, if you can find the time to make contact, that would be appreciated. Also in Dayton, Ohio, we are working on a case there. We need your assistance. If you are in Cincinnati, Columbus, or Dayton, a 20-year-old security officer, female security officer, was on patrol her second day on the job. She was patrolling the Dayton Municipal Parking Garage downtown over the weekend. And early Saturday morning, she noticed two men sitting in a parked vehicle in a handicapped spot, and she approached them and asked if they needed assistance. This was late in the night, overnight hours. It was a parking structure where a contract security agency had the contract. The security officer approached. They said, no, don't need nothing. She left, continued her foot patrol. Came back sometime later, noticed they were still sitting in the car acting suspicious. And she approached them again and asked what they were doing there. According to the police report, the two occupants of the vehicle, the driver and an occupant, both male, jumped out and beat the woman almost unconscious. 20 years old, second day on the job as a security officer, beat her head against the concrete floor, punched her repeatedly, kicked her, and then robbed her and left her for dead. She had no weapon, no mace, and no communication in the overnight hours. Police are very concerned about this brutal attack. We are very concerned, and we're trying to learn more about this to find out who the security contract was with so that we can make contact with this 20-year-old. But if you are in that area and you have some contacts, or you can do a little legwork and find out who the security agency was patrolling Dayton Municipal Parking Garage located downtown, we would appreciate any assistance in this so that we can contact her and see if we can help her out. You're on the air. Okay. But if you have any capabilities of reaching out and you're in the Ohio area, we would like to like for you to do that, and we would certainly appreciate that. We don't have a name of the security officer. We don't have a name of the company she worked for. We just know that she was on duty at the Dayton Municipal Parking Garage downtown. So if you are in Colorado or Ohio, or you would like to assist, please contact us. Send us an email at adminassist@privateofficer.com. adminassist@privateofficer.com. Danny just emailed, and he says he is in Colorado Springs, and he will be checking on that first thing in the morning. So thank you very much, Danny. We need anyone else in the area that wants to pitch in. We would appreciate it. Whatever we can do for this security officer during this time, I'm sure he would appreciate. Again, that's the Greeley Mall in Greeley, Colorado, or the Dayton, Ohio situation where the 20-year-old was beaten almost unconscious on her second day. Second day, can you believe it? Second day of work. All she did was ask if they needed help. I'm very concerned in this situation because it was an unarmed post, no communication. Obviously, very little training, no way to defend herself, obviously not against two big bullies, two big monsters, probably high, drunk. For them to jump out of their vehicle and assault a female shows you right there that they have no conscience and what they're worth. For them to beat a female in uniform, it's even worse. If you want to help out, send us an email at adminassist@privateofficer.com. adminassist@privateofficer.com. I will interject one thought here, and I guess this is to maybe prevent a situation like this Dayton, Ohio, from happening. We teach all the time about assessing the threat, you know, and this we don't do Monday morning quarterback. We don't sit back and second guess because we're not there, but I'm going to tell you, from a trainer's aspect, from a trainer's view, from a law enforcement and security professional 35-plus year view, I will tell you this. In this particular situation, under the parameters given, the first time around that she stopped, she should have been able to assess the threat. Of course, she had only been on the job for 2 days. 2 days. So, you know, she may not have known how. But in this particular case, in the overnight hours, you're all alone, no communication, no defense mechanism, no weapons, no nothing. If these characters don't leave the premises and you spot them at a later time in the night, in the later time in the shift, at that point, you have to believe that something is askew, something is amiss, something is not right. Even someone who is untrained even the general public understands, hey, this might be something I need to call the police for. I might need to call the cops and get them involved. And so in this situation, and again, like I said, I'm not second-guessing. We're not the Monday morning quarterback. But in this situation, the right thing would have been, prior to making contact the second time, would have been to contact 911 and get some backup coming. I always teach, I always train that if you do not have a full staff, now there are some security agencies and some proprietary departments where you've got 4, 5, 8, 10 people on staff that's going to be there when you call for backup long before the police. So you're in good shape. But in a situation like this where the security officer is working alone, unarmed, little or no communication, out, and you know, she might as well have been in no man's land, even though she was in downtown Dayton, a fairly large city. The right thing and the best thing would have been to call 911, get to a phone, call for backup, and observe the suspects from afar. Keep them into your line of vision. Don't pose a threat to them. Don't go get in their face, especially after you've already made an initial contact and they still haven't moved. So they obviously do not respect you at that point. They obviously don't respect your authority. They're not afraid of you. So why make a second contact? Why go up and confront the suspects when you're probably going to get the same results that you got the first time, or maybe worse, and you're not in a position to defend yourself? So in this position, in this situation, if you find yourself in a similar situation and you're unarmed, you don't have communication, you don't have backup, you know, your best bet at this point is to wait for backup, notify 911, get to a place where you can call the police, and then move away until the cavalry comes. I've taught it many times. You know, you can't assume that by approaching them 2, 3, 4 times that you're going to get a different result, because you're probably not going to, and you're probably going to be injured just like, unfortunately, this young woman was. So FYI, I hope that you take that information to heart. Tonight, we're going to be following up on a part two and the final part of the six steps to securing a crime scene. You're going to hear me say often tonight, and whenever you hear me, whether live and in person or via the radio or on any of my training CDs, blogs, or other medium, you're going to hear me always say these three things about our job. And that is, we have an obligation, we have a responsibility, and we have a duty. We have an obligation to our client. We have an obligation to the staff, the employees that we protect, whether it be at the shopping mall, the office complex, the school, it doesn't matter. We have an obligation to the patrons, the visitors of that property, and we have a responsibility to them as well to respond adequately, appropriately, efficiently, expediently, and knowledgeable. We have a responsibility. Not only that, we have a duty in every case to take some form of action, whether it be call 911 or get involved. And we'll be talking more about that in securing the crime scene. But we do. A lot of people just don't understand, including our boss, including the security company owners, including sometimes even the clients and law enforcement. But we do have a responsibility, an obligation, and a duty to be involved in securing a crime scene. And we'll be talking about that tonight. You're on the air. Okay, I can't pick up your call, sir. I'm sorry. For whatever reason, your phone number is not working with my system, and I apologize. But we do have an obligation, and we do have a duty. We have a duty to respond and to secure the crime scene in some manner. And we'll be talking more about that shortly. I mentioned Sunday about our chapters. Just very, very briefly, we are full steam ahead on this. We are very close to opening a number of chapters. As I said on Sunday, this is extremely important. We are going to do this. It's an extremely important step for our organization, our association, our members, our associates, the communities that you're in. It's very important that we establish these chapters and go through with the plan, and we're going to. As of Sunday, we had 74 applicants. As of today, we have 82. We have more than 40 cities, 32 states, and 10 countries that we have to consider. I just mentioned a minute ago, there are 24 time zones, 9 in Russia alone, 9, can you believe it? We've got to consider all the differences, all the different needs, all the different languages, all the different material that will be different in the different countries, even sometimes in the different states. And so there's a lot of work, a lot of work, and we are diligently getting through the steps necessary. There's also some legal steps that we have to take, and we're there. So if you are still interested in becoming a chapter manager, all you have to do is send us an email at adminassist@privateofficer.com, adminassist@privateofficer.com. We'll send you all the necessary paperwork. There's a small application. We'll send you a description of the ACM's responsibilities. It is not a second, third, or fourth job. It will not be time-consuming. It will not require hours and hours and days of your time. Your time consideration for this position, 5, 6, 7 hours tops a month. One meeting a month. One meeting. 90 minutes to 2 hours max. You're going to be involved in some recruiting aspects. You'll be involved in some benevolent aspects. If there are injured security officers in your neighborhood, such as these two here in Dayton, Ohio, and Greeley, Colorado, and you may be involved in some other areas, but it's not going to be very time-consuming. So if you're still interested, we'll keep taking applications until we're at the point of we've got every city covered, every state covered, and we're nowhere close to that. There's probably, 400, 500 major cities in the U.S. So we're a long ways from covering all cities, that's for sure. And there's 18 states without any applicants right now, so feel free to send in an inquiry if you're interested to adminassist@privateofficer.com. We'll certainly consider you. It's not a big deal. It's a very small application for each applicant. And basically the only real requirements is going to be that you do have to be a member of the association, obviously, and comply with the bylaws and the chapter requirements. If you need any more information, just send us an email, adminassist@privateofficer.com. I'm also looking for co-hosts for the radio program. I love what I do and love to be behind the microphone, but we have offered this in the past. We're willing to share the microphone with you if you want to co-host the program. If you want to be a co-host, if you want to be a radio DJ, it's very simple. Just send us an email at radio@privateofficer.com, radio@privateofficer.com. Submit a topic of interest that you want to talk about. Do the research. Even better yet, if you're a trainer, a manager, a security instructor, that provides a little bit more credibility to your subject matter, but it's not required. But if you are, certainly send us an email to radio@privateofficer.com. Radio@privateofficer.com. By the way, we just decided this week we're also going to have guest co-host. This is pretty exciting, actually. Pretty cool. Guest co-host at the new LP Zone, the new LP Zone radio show, which is going to be kicking off in just a few weeks, sometime in August or early September. We're going to allow co-hosts who work in loss prevention, retail security at the mall. If you want to be a co-host of that program, and you now the only drawback to the LP Zone, you've got to work in loss prevention. You've got to be either an LP agent, an LP manager, asset protection manager, a district or a regional LPM, or a mall security officer agent. Very important that you work in that field, because loss prevention is a very specialized area of private security. But, hey, we've just decided this week. If you want to be a guest co-host on the LP Zone, that's available to you also. Research the topic. What do you want to talk about? Send us an email at radio@privateofficer.com, radio@privateofficer.com. And we'll be happy to share the mic with you, too. We really are excited about that program, too. I've been saying this for a couple of weeks now, LP Zone. We're going to have a lot of fun, a lot of loss prevention people out there, people working not only for major big box stores, but people are working for specialty retailers, you know, discounters, automotive companies, warehouses that have loss prevention staff, shopping mall security. A lot of people work in the retail security area. It is the largest area, I think, from what I've been told, from what I've seen, it's the largest area of security there is. And I definitely know that loss prevention are involved in every aspect of security and law enforcement you can think of. They get involved in fraud cases, shoplifting, theft, employee investigations, embezzlement, various crimes that happen in the store. So they're involved in everything. And so we're just really, really excited about this new program. And now you can co-host. You can be a guest co-host on the show. Send us an email, radio@privateofficer.com. Quick note about the website. It will be rolled out, from what I'm told, number of days away. So we're happy about that as well, and can't wait. Couple of programs coming up that you may be of interest to you or someone you know, coworker. We've got a couple of shows coming up on civil liabilities and how the civil courts really work. Most people do not know. They really don't. They don't know what the civil court does. People, even those who have been sued, do not know what the civil courts do. We're going to be talking all about the civil court law. Hello, you're on Private Officer Talk Radio. If you'd like to call in, I'll give you a couple of minutes. Area code 347-426-3807. Area code 347-426-3807. So we'll be talking about the civil court and how that affects private security, because it does. Private security has a huge liability, certain consequences that they have to be cognizant about. And we'll be talking more about that. We're also going to be talking about, believe it or not, and I just, I can't believe I'm going to be doing this. We're going to be talking about hip to be fit. I don't know who comes up with this stuff, but we're going to be talking about getting in shape. I don't chase bad guys much anymore. It does happen now and then. I may get more actively involved in that area again one day. But when you're sitting behind a desk or behind a wheel of a car and driving around, you know, you get out of shape, you gain weight, things aren't where they used to be, and, you know, we're in the business where we have to be fit. We have to be healthy for ourselves, for our job, our career, and for those that we love. So we're going to be talking about that with a nutritionist and a workout guru. We're hooking up that program for you now, and we'll be bringing that to you in the next few weeks. We're also going to be talking in a couple of weeks about specific areas of patrol duty. We'll be talking about building searches, alarm response, and other things to keep you safe, including the cover and contact technique. Cover and contact. And I've got a couple of requests to do a show about HUD properties, because HUD properties, tax deferred, Section 8, public housing, whether it be city, state, or federal, is my area of expertise. I wrote the book, literally, back in 1984, 88. I've done tons of training for the federal government. I was a contractor. I have been a contractor for HUD since the early 80s, and we have taught all around the country, not only security, but property managers. So if you are currently working a tax-deferred property, a HUD property, a city housing authority, a state housing authority, or any type of government-owned, there are two types of HUD properties or Section 8s. There are those that are privately owned by companies who get reimbursements or other considerations from the government for renting to the low income. And there are those that are true housing authorities owned by the city or the state. There are also tax-deferred properties. And without going all into all that tonight, it's a very complex arena to be involved in. But there are quite a few. I know of about four companies who have contacted us in the last month or so seeking information. In fact, I'm going to be working on a new book next year, in the midst of writing two books right now. And so I'm pretty tied up in the writing category. But next year I will be writing a new book specifically about policing, private policing of private property, HUDs, Section 8s, so forth. So we'll be having a show about that coming up within the next 2 to 4 weeks. Be looking for that as well. We've got a lot going on, no doubt about it. Last Sunday, I gave you a ton of ways to be involved. You can be involved with private officer in many, many, many different areas. We just introduced over the last few weeks the new Honor Guard. We're very excited about that. They will be based out of our chapter, so if you want to be involved in the Honor Guard, if you've previously been involved, we'd love for you to let us know. Email us at adminassist@privateofficer.com. adminassist@privateofficer.com. Also, another very hot item, literally, we've had a lot of response on this, and I knew that we would. We are establishing new airsoft training and competition teams. We are considering paintball teams as well, although so far the overwhelming information and response has been on the airsoft, which airsoft is now coming out with a new pellet that will have a ink or a substance, a marking substance, that will allow you to know when you've struck your subject, your target. As of right now, it does not include that. You're kind of on the honor system. If you get hit, you get hit, and, you know, you fall down dead. But if you have used airsoft weapons in the training capacity, then you know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, you don't. But right now, airsoft weapons, the pellets don't have markers. And so when you're training, you know, you could be shooting your target, your suspect, but there's no sure way of knowing that you've got a direct hit or you've got a hit at all. And now I've been made aware of that they will be releasing very, very soon a pellet that has a marking agent, hopefully one that's, you know, water soluble, as you can wash it with water. But so we're probably leaning more toward the airsoft training and competition. But we've had a lot of response. Not too late to get involved. You don't have to be a member of the association to be involved. So if you would like to be involved, send us an email to adminassist@privateofficer.com. Adminassist@privateofficer.com. Mark says in an email that product is already available. So thanks, Mark, for that email tip. I don't know if I haven't heard about that, but I will be checking into it. If you have been on airsoft teams throughout the country, if you've participated either with other security departments, agencies, law enforcement, we'd love to have you on our team. It'll be a lot of fun, a lot of networking, interaction, and excellent training. So just send us an email at adminassist@privateofficer.com. Do want to mention, as I always do, for those who may be new listeners, hey, you want to contact us, you want to follow us, our main website, which is, you know, everything that has to do with Private Officer International, is on www.privateofficer.com, www.privateofficer.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, facebook.privateofficer.com, Twitter/privateofficer. Also, all of our news feeds directly into Twitter. So every time we update the blog, you get a new Twitter tweet. You can also join us on our own forum, our own little social network at privateofficer.ning.com, and you can read our daily news blogs at privateofficernews.wordpress.com. And we are very excited, like I said, about the new website, because it will be much more interactive, much more easier to navigate, and a lot more stuff going to be on there. So be looking for that any day now. I'm very impatient sometimes, and I have to kind of hold back sometimes because things take time. And I wish I could just kind of snap my finger and it all be there, but just like the chapter thing, but it just doesn't work that way. But, you know, in time. If you have not renewed your membership, please do so as soon as possible. If you have, I want to talk to you also a little bit about recruitment. We're on a big recruitment kick from now until the end of the year, and we're really going to be pulling out all of the stops trying to recruit a significant number of members. We have a good amount. We get new members every day almost. But we are really going to be pulling out the stops because we have an excellent product. For those of you in branding and in marketing, rather, you know about branding and you know about brands and you know about companies and how they brand themselves and they market themselves. And we have an excellent brand. We offer everything that the private security industry, the individual security officer, needs. And as a member, of the association, we can supply so many benefits to those members. Unfortunately, not everyone takes advantage. Not everyone takes advantage of those benefits, many benefits, but we have them. And in fact, we're adding several new benefits next month and in September, so it's very exciting. But as a brand, Private Officer International has a huge, huge amount to offer not only members, but also companies who may be interested in advertising with us on our web, our radio program, and other areas. So anyways, over the next 4 to 5 months, the rest of the year actually, we're going to be doing a lot of recruiting. We're going to be doing some regional recruiting. We're going out on recruitment drives. I'll be setting up recruitment booths at several different events. I'm going to be on the road, as I have already been. From now until the end of the year, you may look up and I may be there. We're going to be everywhere, and we'll be doing a lot of recruiting, a lot of training, networking, and we'll even broadcast our radio programs live right there from your office, your community, your town. So if you want to be involved, hey, invite us over and we'll be happy to come, especially if there's a Krispy Kreme. I'm joking. We need to be fit. No, if there's a Krispy Kreme donut shop close by, I'll definitely be there. But we're going to be recruiting a lot. In fact, we're going to be using LinkedIn, if you're familiar with that site, Facebook, and Yahoo. We'll be recruiting starting next month on those particular internet sites. And we're also going to be doing some other campaigning. So if you'd like to be involved in that, you can do it. We also pay you for referrals. A lot of people don't know that because they don't read their packets that they get. But if you refer three people, you get $20. Yeah, you do. It's just that simple. If you refer nine people, you get $100. You don't have to sign them up. You don't have to do any paperwork. They just have to say they were referred by you. Sign up your whole staff. Sign up your whole company. Come on, you could be making some extra money. We have a lot of different things going on. You know, there's just so much to make you aware of every program. And I know sometimes it gets repetitive, but that's because we have a lot of different listeners, and we want to make sure that we get the news out to them. Speaking of news, we want to get right to the news right now before we go any further, because there's a lot going on. Scranton, Pennsylvania, a security officer was injured. Pretty bad, actually. And in fact, this is the second time this week that the female loss prevention security officer at Garrity's Market in Scranton, Pennsylvania, was injured. Police say the suspect blew dye into the guard's security officer's face. Last week, the same security officer was slashed on the arm by a woman trying to escape after stealing a quantity of meat from the store. Sounds like a pretty rough neighborhood. They might want to put a few more officers on duty. In both cases, the suspects have been taken into custody. They've been charged with felony robbery. Security officer, she needs a raise. She's in good condition. Tulsa, Oklahoma, breaking news overnight. Tulsa, Oklahoma, police are looking for a suspect who tried to shoot security officers at an apartment complex in Tulsa. And believe it or not, get this, one of them dropped a weapon. It was a submachine gun, according to police. It happened at 64th and South Newport. Security officers approached several men in the complex. They ran away and jumped over a fence and then returned, pointing guns at the security officers, who were armed, luckily, and they fired back. Suspects were not caught, but police are looking for them. It was a very close call. Police say that it is very, you know, likely that had these security personnel not been armed, they may be deceased. Police said that they recovered a Tech 9 that was jammed. A Tech 9 is a semi-automatic machine gun, usually 50 rounds in the banana clip. 50 rounds in the banana clip. Even if you are carrying a semi-automatic and you've got 14 in the clip, or 15, and in some states you can only carry 10, you're still not going to be much match for a Tech 9. Police say they're still looking for the suspects, so my goodness. Silver Spring, Maryland, police say several security officers were injured, law enforcement, during a melee last night, or melee. This happened in Silver Spring in the downtown area. If you're from the D.C. Metro, Maryland, Virginia area, then you know Silver Spring pretty well. Police say a group of men and women in their late teens, early 20s, began to gather in the downtown area. They began bumping into patrons at several outdoor restaurants that began to cause a disturbance. Police responded, and when they did, a near riot broke out. Patrons of restaurants and people that was just walking by were injured. Several received head injuries, facial injuries during this melee. Several law enforcement agencies, including the Montgomery County Police and Transit Police, also responded. 15 people arrested. Security personnel also responded from the complex, a shopping center there called the Veterans Plaza. The security force there responded. 15 people arrested. More than 30 people were involved in the incident, according to law enforcement. The security agency, Peterson Company, said that their security team was involved, and several officers received minor injuries. And this is one of those situations that could have quickly gotten out of hand. Summertime is here. You know, crazy things happen in summertime. Police in Buffalo, New York say it's unfortunate, but the fact of life is that the city of Buffalo had to hire private armed security officers to cool down the atmosphere of the city pools. According to police, several lifeguards had been attacked. One was knocked unconscious. A lot of people in the pools, using the city pools, do not know how to behave themselves. They have been disorderly, causing property damage, disobeying the lifeguards on duty and city staff. So a private security firm has been hired to staff the city pools with armed guards. So far this week, no other incidents have occurred. Things have cooled down at the pools. In Raven County, Georgia, that's up in the north part of the state, a school resource officer has been fired after discovered that he had used his county-issued BlackBerry to send nude postings of himself. Investigators say that he is also accused of soliciting prostitution and misappropriating county-issued equipment. He's been fired after nude pictures of himself was posted on Craigslist, if you're familiar with that internet site. The officer has been identified as Kendrick Maxwell. He says it was a stupid mistake. He's under investigation and could face numerous felony charges. Washington, D.C., police in the Capitol District there say that they've arrested a man yesterday, 35-year-old Ronald T. Brisbane Jr., charged him with 5 murders dating back about almost 20 years ago. According to police, he's responsible for 5 murders in 1994, 98, 99. Police are not saying if they were drug-related or not. Miami, Florida, congratulations to this security officer. Unfortunately, they did not identify him, but we're checking into his identity. Police say a Miami security officer patrolling a business district on 10th Avenue in his golf cart spotted a vehicle burglary in progress. As he approached, the suspect fled, jumping onto a bicycle. But that did not deter the security officer from nabbing him. The security officer sped up on his golf cart, crashed into the bicycle, trapped the suspect underneath the golf cart. Police and rescue workers responded, and the suspect was taken into custody and taken to Jackson Memorial Hospital and then later on to jail. Private security officer also in Miami has been charged with assault on a disabled man. Police say that the security officer was working at a mental health facility in Florida City. Ricardo Miller, 29, is accused of beating a resident at the South Florida Evaluation and Treatment Center. Police say that the security officer is seen on video smacking a resident in the head. He's charged with felony assault on a disabled adult. If convicted, faces up to 5 years in prison, $5,000 in fines. He's been released pending a court appearance. San Jose police, they say it was all an error, just a mistake on their part. A man had walked into a convenience store and bought a dollar lottery ticket, Henry Stevens Amador, thought it was his lucky day. But while standing there looking at his ticket, a group of San Jose police officers violently knocked him down, handcuffed him, and bloodied his face. Officers soon realized, according to the Mercury News, they had the wrong man. They uncuffed him and apologized. But Mr. Amador said, that's not quite good enough. He's contacting an attorney. In Arizona, police there say that 440 DUI arrests were made last week by an Arizona DUI task force. Law enforcement officers say that the special task force that was set up made 9,080 traffic stops. A credit union administrator has been convicted for embezzlement in Chester County, PA. Authorities there say that Ann L. Clyburn was an administrator for a credit union. She stole more than $25,000 from the credit union. She's been convicted and now faces up to 44 years in prison. Two women who was on a multiple store shoplifting spree in Freeport, Illinois, was quickly halted when loss prevention agents at a local Walmart nabbed them for shoplifting in their store. Police charged Jakeisha Lewis, 20, and Tanjanique Haynes, 21, with shoplifting from Walmart, Family Dollar Store, Kmart, and the Dollar Tree. Law enforcement officers say that they noticed her, Lewis, and later Haynes concealing multiple items. Police said that they found a number of items stolen from those other stores. They've been charged with felony burglary in the case and numerous counts of theft. They've been released on an undisclosed amount of bond. Talking about dollar stores in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, police there say a Family Dollar store manager went about it all wrong. He's on the wrong side of the law because he caught a shoplifter. The only problem is police say they're not quite sure that the 23-year-old suspect had stolen anything at all. But the manager chased the suspect out of the store and eventually, after catching him, cut him with a box cutter. Police say that the store manager has been arrested and charged with felony assault. In Atlanta, Georgia, a police officer with the City of Atlanta Police had just made a motor vehicle stop, a traffic violation. He got out of his patrol car and was approaching the vehicle that he stopped. And suddenly, he dropped about 4 feet into the ground. He had fallen into an uncovered drain. The grate had been stolen. The Georgia Department of Transportation said it's been a commonplace problem in the city for some time, people stealing the grate covers for scrap metal. Police say that the officer was injured and was transported to the hospital. He's doing fine, and the DOT has replaced the grate. I told you earlier about Dayton, Ohio. Police there are looking for two men who severely beat an overnight security officer at the Dayton Municipal Garage. The 22-year-old female security officer was on duty second day on the job by herself when she approached a vehicle that was parked in the handicap zone. After the second time of approaching the two males in the vehicle, they jumped out and beat her, smashed her head against the concrete floor, left her for dead, and police are now looking for the two suspects. In Detroit, Michigan, a man is facing the rare possibility of the death penalty in a state that has outlawed capital punishment 163 years ago. Timothy O'Reilly has been charged with the 2001 murder of an armored car guard, Norman Anthony Stevens, 36. Police say that this is a heinous crime. And according to a jailhouse confession, he admitted that he executed the security officer, and that was part of the robbery plan. Because of that reason, he could face the death penalty. We will be following that case to see what the outcome is. San Jose, California, police there say a 16-year-old boy who was apprehended for shoplifting, a teenager with a violent history and a felony past, threatened police that his gang associates would kill the four San Jose police officers who arrested him at the North San Jose Costco store Friday night. The teen suspect, whose name was not released because he's technically considered a juvenile, big deal, says that if police did not release him, him and his gang would seek them out and kill them and the store security officer. Store security said that they watched the teen steal numerous items throughout the store. They were able to nab him and place him in handcuffs until police arrived. The 16-year-old faces multiple charges, including threatening law enforcement. Police in Tulsa, Oklahoma, are also investigating a shooting at a Tulsa Housing Authority complex Sunday night. They say a Wackenhaus security officer opened fire on an unarmed man. They don't know why. They say the man was trying to visit a relative. He was turned away at the gate prior to backing out. The officer fired at the man, who supposedly was not armed. Police are investigating it, so we'll let you know what happens. Nightclub security officer shot and killed a knife-wielding patron in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Police there say that the security bouncer at Grumpy's Bar fatally shot a 24-year-old man who had been barred from the bar, thrown out, basically, after a disturbance. Terso Gomez Jr., 24, returned shortly with a large knife. Police say the security officer was defending himself from the Gomez suspect. The case has been turned over to the Hennepin County Attorney's Office. They're going to decide whether or not charges are pending. But right now, police think it's a case of self-defense. The military is reporting that Army suicides are up substantially, both active and retired military personnel are killing themselves at a much more rapid pace. Just over the weekend, a retired soldier at Fort Campbell bought some gasoline, poured it on himself, and tried to set himself on fire at Gate 4. Police say that passerbys were able to put the fire out and hold the man in custody until police arrived. It's a sad situation. Law enforcement say that more than 160 soldiers have committed suicide last year, and this year so far, 146 soldiers. Remember those heroes. A man in Cleveland, Ohio has received prison for the hit-and-run injury of a security officer. Police say that the man struck a Great Lakes Mall security officer with his car trying to flee after stealing more than $2,000 worth of clothes September 25th last year. Jermaine Cousins, 30, has been sentenced to 8 years in prison for the robbery and felonious assault. Judge Richard Collins, Jr., said because Cousins already had other felony warrants out for him and had a past history of robbery, that prison was the only way to go. He could have been sentenced to 18 years in prison, but he will serve the full 8. Las Vegas police said that they had to shoot and kill a Costco shopper. Police was called to the store in Vegas on Charleston and Pavilion Street This happened on the 12th. Police there say that the man was acting suspiciously and disorderly. Police also say that a patron and employee of the store reported that the man had a weapon. When Vegas police arrived, they told the man to put his hands in the air. They saw that he did have a gun. At that point, the man reached for the gun. Police fired and shot the man. The investigation continues, but police say it was a good shoot. I don't know if you read about this one, but in Newport, Kentucky, a lawyer's strategy for his client's murder case is that Woody Smith strangled his wife during a caffeine-induced bout of insanity. That's right. They're blaming caffeine on the murder. Woody Smith faces felony murder and the death of his wife. He says he drank too many energy drinks laced with diet pills that caused him to have a temporary bout of insanity. Good luck with that defense. That was in Newport, Kentucky, up in the North Kentucky, almost Ohio area. Also in the news this week, a lot of news. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, alert security officers at the Granite Mall, Granite Run Mall, apprehended a suspect for voyeurism. The Peeping Tom was arrested after security spotted a man apparently maneuvering an altered bag under the skirt of a teenage girl. Security quickly apprehended the suspect and took 32-year-old Michael Stankus into custody. He's arrested and charged with invasion of privacy. He has been released on bond. That was very quick work by the mall security officers, so kudos to them. And there's a lot of these sickos out there, so be alert. A heavily armed man in Toledo, Ohio, was arrested by mall security and Toledo police. They say he was carrying loaded guns, drugs, and lots of cash at the Westfield Franklin Park Mall Saturday. 23-year-old Derek Obtua was charged with aggravated trafficking and other felonies. They say that he entered Dick's Sporting Goods at the mall with a gun in his waistband. A witness spotted the gun and notified a security officer and an off-duty police officer, who also notified another off-duty officer who was working at the mall. All of these officers was able to quickly subdue the suspect and take him into custody, but he was heavily armed and he had a considerable amount of drugs. That's going to wrap up our news for this edition. We have a caller. Let me see if I can get a hold of him. Caller, you're on the air. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Caller, are you there? I guess not. I'm sorry about that. We're just not able to connect with that particular person. But that is the news. As you can see, there's always news, always news. I want to remind you also about the Security Emotion book. You can still become an instant author. I wish I was saying that you could become an instant millionaire. Woo! Boy, I'd have a lot of people standing in line for that one. But you can become an instant author. All you have to do is submit 200-plus words of an incident, a situation you've been involved in directly during your career as a private security officer. It could be something dramatic, something happy, something very sad. It could be something, you know, funny. It could be something weird. We are compiling a book called Security in Motion, which will give the life and times of private security all over the country and around the world. And you're more than happy. We're more than happy to have you to submit a story, and you'll become an instant published author, because you'll get full credit for your involvement. I also want to remind you of the Private Officer Memorial Week. We really need you to get involved in this. I mean, this is a great opportunity for you to network with other security officers in your area. It doesn't take but a moment to knock on the door. Go to the mall, pass out a couple flyers, make a couple of calls, stop by one of your local security companies. You know, most security guards, most security officers, proprietary or contract, have contacts. They know other security people. They know law enforcement. Let's go. Get in order. Get in a step. You know, you want to be involved. There's a hundred ways to be involved, but this is one of the most important ways. This is our second annual Private Officer Memorial Week, September 19th through the 25th. Going to have numerous live events. You can be involved. You can hold your own ceremony. It doesn't take but a few moments. It doesn't have to be major. It doesn't have to be a big fiasco. It doesn't have to be held at the area stadium. It can be in your office, a local park. It could be four or five of you. We'll help you put it together. Send us an email at adminassist@privateofficer.com. By the way, anytime you need to reach us, adminassist@privateofficer.com. We have a help desk now, and all of those emails go to that help desk, and they pretty much handle that. If it's something that has to do with the radio programs, you can send me an email direct at radio@privateofficer.com. But please do get involved with the Private Officer Second Annual Memorial Week, September 19th to the 25th. We'll be happy to show you how to submit a letter to your local city government, the mayor, or the governor, and get a proclamation release to recognize the Private Security Officer Memorial Week. Also, tonight we got a couple of birthdays that we have to quickly get out. Happy birthday to you. I better not sing. Doug Good, 31. He is in San Diego, California. Doug is one of those loss prevention people that we've been talking about. See, there's a lot of people, lots and lots of people that work in loss prevention and retail security. Happy birthday, Doug. I hope that you've had a great day. 31 years old, man. You got a long time before you retire. I'm just teasing with you. Ken Love, 53. He's in Forestville, Alabama. Well, it just so happens I know where that's at, Ken. You're over on the west side of Birmingham. That's really kind of part of Birmingham, Alabama. But happy birthday. He's 52. 5'2". Happy birthday to you. Chris Brown is in Mechanicsville, Virginia. That's near the Richmond area. Happy birthday to you, Chris. He's 39. And Stone, no last name. Stone is 45 and no city. Happy birthday, Stone. Hope you don't get stoned for your birthday. Emails tonight. Stacy in Nashville says, thank you very much for all you do. Recently became aware of Private Officer International through another member. I'll be signing up soon. Thank you, Stacy. We hope that you do sign up quickly. Tell everyone that you can. There's a lot of members and associates and friends of Private Officer International in the metro Nashville area. And we are really looking at that market hard to do something. We're definitely going to have a large chapter there, and we may even open up a office there. Maybe one day. Tim said, I'm just so happy with the great benefits of your association. I've used several of them in the past month. Thank you, Brian, for responding to my questions. Thank you, Rick, for the radio show. You're welcome, and thanks for being a member. Again, make sure that you spread the word. Don in Tampa says, POI rocks. Don, you must be young. You gotta be. Us old fogies, we don't use rock. We don't use hip. We don't use, you know, we might use cool, you know, from back in the 70s. Don, thanks for the email. POI does rock. Kelsey in New Orleans says, I'm glad I found you on the web. very interesting what you guys have for the frontline security, for private officers, and we appreciate what you're doing. Thank you, and again, spread the word. We've got quite a few associates and members in the New Orleans, Baton Rouge area. Spread the word. There's a lot of private security people down there. Patty Stance in New Hartford wrote in. Patty Stance, New Hartford. I don't know where that's at. I know there's a New Hartford, Connecticut. Is that it? Really liked securing the scene, part one. Can't wait for part two. Well, coming up shortly. Brian Kavanaugh in Albuquerque, New Mexico, sent a quick email. He said, I'm very excited about Private Officer and just became a member. Great benefits. And basically, he's giving kudos to Private Officer. So thank you very much. Thanks for being a member. Sandy Prescott in Fort Bend, Indiana, says she just turned 35 over the weekend. 35. And guess what she does for work? She's a loss prevention agent. And she's excited about the LP Zone radio show, as is many. Thanks for the email, Sandy. And Stuart, 48, from unknown location, wrote in just to say hi. Hi, back to you, Stuart. Thank you, everyone who sends emails. That's one of the things that we look for every day. Drop us a line. Let us know how we're doing. You know, the great thing about email is it only takes a second. Really, it doesn't take long at all. Drop a line. Pronto, and just let us know that you appreciate it, that you're listening, and whether you're a member or an associate or not, and we'll appreciate it. We do want you to be involved. There's tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of stuff going on with Private Officer International. You're on the air. Well, unfortunately, we're not able to get that caller, so we're going to give up. Tonight, we want to get right into our training, securing a crime scene. Securing a crime scene. Many people, many employers, many security departments, many security chiefs, many clients, and even law enforcement may disagree, may not have the same philosophy as I do about what the duties, obligations, responsibilities, there's those three words again, of private security are. Some people, especially employers, especially security contract, security contract companies, are still very observe and report. And that's all about liability, which I really don't want to get into in this particular program, but it's more about their bottom line. They don't want you to do anything that's going to risk being sued, anything that might cause them to become involved in a litigation case. They don't want you to get involved in anything, anything that may involve having any type of adverse consequences with the company. I understand that. I do. I've owned a security company since the 80s. I understand that. But unfortunately, we're living in a different day and age. Unfortunately, many clients do expect that we're going to be proactive and that we're going to do at least the minimal. So what is the minimal on a crime scene? How do we know it is a crime scene? How do we know what is and what is not? We went over a little bit about this in part one. But tonight, in part two, we're going to talk about the six steps that you have to do to secure the crime scene. And this is all minimal stuff. We're not talking about CSI stuff. I'm not teaching tonight about crime scene investigation. So get that out of your head. Get that out of your mind. tonight, we're not saying that you have to be the person taking the pictures, that you have to be the person scooping up the evidence. We're not saying you're the person tagging the stuff. I'm not saying that at all. You don't have to carry around a little black bag or a case with the crime scene tape and the digital camera and the video cam and all of that other scientific stuff. You don't have to have any of that to do this job, securing the scene, securing a crime scene. Chances are good for most security officers working in proactive areas, apartments, malls, parks, amusement centers, office complexes, military installations, resorts, residential communities, chances are good, more than good, that you're going to get involved in some type of crime scene. Even those of you who are working in loss prevention, you're going to get involved in a crime scene. Just the other day, we're talking about just a few days ago, a department store had a fire that was set by a suspect. They set the store on fire while their partner fled out a fire exit door, with stolen merchandise. What do you think you have there? What do you have in the middle of the store where the fire was after the fire department put out the fire? You got a crime scene. Arson. First degree arson. That's a Class A felony in every state. 20 years in prison. 10 years in prison. If the suspect is caught. So you've got a crime scene there. You may be in charge of that particular area until law enforcement gets there. It may be quick. It may not be quick. I don't want to get into the dispatching aspect of law enforcement. Maybe I will on another show. But there are priority calls and priority codes that are used. I guess the fire may be a higher priority. But on a busy night, it may be 10, 15, 20 minutes before they get there in some metropolitan areas. I know if you're around the Atlanta area, it may be an hour. Who knows? Some departments are faced with layoffs, budget cuts, maybe longer, even for an arson, because that's a property crime. Nobody's hurt. Nobody's been shot. Nobody's been burnt. Still considered a property crime. It may not be a priority one call. So you may be in charge of that crime scene. So what I'm saying to you tonight is that you may have a good likelihood, regardless of where you are working, of being involved in some type of crime scene. There's a good likelihood, and it may be more than an every once in a while thing. It may be a weekly thing. It may be a monthly thing. And in some cases, depending on where you're working, it could almost be a daily thing. It depends on how active of a property and exactly what your position is. We can't assume for a moment that it's never going to happen, that you're never going to be faced with it, because the reality is you will be. I can't see how that's my job. That's a police's job. I just don't know. I'm a guard over here, and I'm not supposed to be touching nothing, and my boss told me. That's right. You're not supposed to be touching anything. That's good. Remember that. My boss told me, call the police. Don't do nothing, and don't get involved. Remember those three words. Obligations. Responsibilities, duties. You've got an obligation to do something. You've got a responsibility, and you've got a duty to act. We're going to be talking a lot about crime scenes over the course of the various training that I'll be providing in the next few months. As I was saying in the first part one, a crime scene could be almost anything. You cannot assume that something is not a crime scene unless you know it for a fact. A fire at a store, a fire at a warehouse, a fire at a hotel, a fire at a car dealership could be a crime. And if it's not a crime, it could still be a scene that needs to be protected. Tell me why. Why? Okay, let's say you're on duty at a car dealership. 2 o'clock in the morning. Fire alarm goes off. You got a fire. There's smoke. You call 911. Right? You call 911. You get them on the way. Fire department's responding. Everybody's responding. Police is coming. Fire department. Everybody's coming. Okay, now, they're all coming. Are you supposed to let people in there? Are you supposed to let other people come in? Well, I think it's just lightning struck. I think it's just this. I think it could be. But let's say, for argument's sake, that it's not an intentional crime. Let's say, for argument's sake, that it probably may be something else. Why do we still have to protect that scene? In almost every jurisdiction, the fire marshal's office is going to be involved. Anytime we have a structure fire in my district, in my fire district, anytime we have a structure fire or even a car fire, guess who comes out? The fire marshal. Guess what they do? They determine the cause of the fire. Was it electrical? Was it something combustible? Was it a lightning strike? Was there a storm in the area? Was it intentional? Is this an arson? That's their job. So even though it may not be a crime scene per se, maybe it's not a crime scene per se, it's still a scene that has to be protected until an investigation can take place. And that investigation will be determined by the fire department. Every jurisdiction is going to be a little bit different. Every fire department, every police department is going to be a little bit different. They may not come out on structure fires. They may not come out on car fires. I don't know. I know in my jurisdiction, we do. But you, when you're on duty, you have to be prudent in your decision making. You have to assess. You have to determine what is the course of action to take now. What is my next step? Is this something I should be concerned about? Is this something that I should be securing? Like I said over and over again, we have an obligation. We have a responsibility. We have a duty to be prudent, to act appropriate, efficiently, to be responsible in what we do. Because we have an obligation to our client, we have an obligation to law enforcement to keep the scene clean, secure, uncontaminated. We'll be talking about that momentarily. But a car scene, a car accident, a fire, a medical call, an injured person, a burglary, a theft, a shoplifting, a robbery, a rape, a stabbing, all those things could be and probably will be a crime scene, or at least a scene that needs to be protected. And there are 6 steps that you need to take to protect the scene. During part one, we began getting a little bit into the scene size up. If you have not taken this course, I strongly advise you to strongly take this course. But the scene size up is used by medical providers, fire department, and law enforcement everywhere. This is a technique that is taught around the country. It's a technique that I teach. As soon as you arrive on the scene, begin to do scene size up. If you begin to look at the scene, are there people still there that could hurt me? Is the suspect still there? Are there wires down? Are there contaminants? Are there fluids on the floor? Is there gas leaking? Is there smoke, fire, sparks? Are there people in the area that may harm me? Are there safety issues that will prohibit me from getting into the scene? You have to do a 360, and all of this is done in seconds. You have to be able to assess the threat and assess what equipment you're going to need. This is going to help you to evaluate the type of response that you're going to have, what your next step is, and what resources you're going to need, whether it's going to be an ambulance, a fire department, police, whatever. The first officer on the scene of a crime should always approach the scene slowly, methodically. What does that mean? Methodically, slowly. What are you talking about? You need to be sure of what you're getting into, number one. Number two, you can't go charging into a scene. This has to do a lot with my patrol techniques and patrol seminar that I'll be giving later on in another radio program. But you can't charge up into a scene. You can get hurt that way. You can be hurt by someone who's there, who's going to do harm to you, or you can be hurt by, like I said, maybe some electrical wires, maybe some gas on the floor, maybe some fluids, maybe some other hazards in the area. You've got to approach methodically, slowly, cautiously, with every 360 look around, with every one of your senses in full gear. Look, smell. What do I smell? Do I smell gas? Do I smell gasoline? What do I see? What do I hear? Oh, I still hear gunshots. Oh, I hear electricity in the wires that have fallen. What do I feel? Feeling has a lot to do with the scene size up. You know, you've heard this 1,000 times before. Things just didn't feel right to me. The hairs in the back of my neck were standing up. Oh, my goodness. They were 10 feet tall. But I went in there anyways. Big mistake. You've got to use your senses before you take any further steps. You've got to protect you because, as I say all the time, if you get hurt, you're going to be no good to anyone else. So the first officer on the scene quickly evaluates, assesses, methodically approaches the scene and gets a good picture overall of what's going on. Now, as soon as you do that, this is all in part one, step one. But as soon as you do that, you need to get the appropriate help on the way. Well, I think the police are already on the way. I think someone done already called the police. I think they got called already. Yeah, I think so. Oh, yeah, I hear them on the way. I hear them. They're on the way. I hear them. Could be an ambulance. You might need a fire department. I hear sirens. Yeah, it might be the wrong sirens. So you have to quickly evaluate what resources you need. And then get on the horn, get on the phone, get on the two-way, and get the fire department if you need the fire department. Get the police. Let them know what you have. I've got one shot. Suspect fled out the back door. Give them a description if you can. This is all part of the scene size-up in step one. The scene is going to dictate to you what will become priority. You may not have time to do this. You may not have time to do anything because you may be confronted with the suspect still there. You may be confronted with a medical emergency. You may be confronted with a person who is seriously injured, and they need your help now, not after you do 100 different things, not after you do a run around checking everything out, not after you take notes, not after you make 15 calls to your supervisors, the client, the police, the fire department. No, they need you now, now. So step one may vary from time to time. The scene will dictate to you what you do and what order you do it in. Every situation, every scene will not be the same. Every call you go on from now until the cows come home will not be the same. They're going to dictate, the scene will dictate to you what steps you take and the order that you take them in. Step two, you've got to make the scene safe. It's your responsibility. It's your obligation. It's your duty when you get on scene to make the scene safe for you, for the responders coming, the emergency workers. Is there a suspect on scene? Is this a shooting, a stabbing, a robbery? Is the suspect still on the scene? Have you seen the suspect or suspects? If at all possible, you may need to take the suspect into custody before you can make the scene safe, before you can secure the scene. You may have to deal first with an armed suspect or with a shoplifter or with a robbery suspect or a homicide suspect. Hey, I told you about Pensacola just a couple of weeks ago, walking around, minding his own business, bam, bam. Security officer heard a couple of gunshots, quickly assessed the threat, got the suspect, saw a suspect shooting in progress, got him in custody at gunpoint. He had to make the scene safe. He had to take the suspect into custody at gunpoint before he was able to protect a homicide scene. Sometimes you've got to render aid to the injured victim. You can't worry about the scene. Oh, I better not touch that. I was told don't touch nothing. I better not touch that. Oh, poor baby. He's on the floor with a gunshot to his head. I'm not going to get over there and all that mess because I can't mess up the crime scene. You can't worry sometimes about fingerprints. You can't worry about disturbing the evidence. You can't worry about the scene. Too bad about the scene. Life over property. Sure, if you can render aid without contaminating the scene or without contaminating the scene much, that is the preferred method. That is what real CSI investigators would prefer. But sometimes all that's thrown out the window when you've got to render aid to the victim or you've got to make the scene secure and safe by taking a suspect into custody. You've got to do what you've got to do first. In the real world, this is what happens. On TV, it doesn't work that way. On TV, everything is nice and neat and orderly. Everything is by the numbers. There is no numbers in the real world. I'm giving you 6 steps, but guess what? There's going to be times when step 3 comes first, step 2 comes fifth, Step one comes six. It doesn't always run one through six. So step two, you got to make the scene safe. If you can at all possible, if you can take a suspect into custody, do so. If you can't, get out of there. Get some help. Get the cavalry on the way. Get some backup units. And then you guys go in and take the suspect into custody. Render aid to the victim if you can. If you can control the contamination of the scene, do that. Move as little as possible. Move the items around as little as possible. If you have to move things, let me give you a couple of tips. Quickly take out your camera phone. Every phone's got a camera these days. Don't tell me you don't got one. Every phone's got a camera these days. Take out your cell phone. Take out your camera phone. Click some pictures quickly of the scene before you move the items around. It takes a split second. Well, the guy's bleeding over in the corner. I understand that. It only takes a second to click a couple of pictures. Take a good mental picture of it in your head. If you don't have much of a memory, it's not going to help you. But if you can, disturb as little as possible. Do not use the phone. Do not use anything there in the crime scene, if at all possible. Step three, once you've made the crime scene safe, once you have secured the area, once you have all of the injured taken care of, and you know there are no suspects, no one there that's going to do harm to you, step three is containment. Containment. Well, what's that? What's containment? You talking about the oil well in the Gulf? Are you going to containment down there? No. I'm talking about containment of the scene. Once everything is taken care of, the injured is taken care of, no suspects, now you have containment. Set up a perimeter of the crime scene. It might be outdoor. It might be a block long. It may be just a couple of steps. The crime scene may have happened in a restroom. It may have happened in the middle of the mall. Maybe you have a crime scene the size of a football stadium. It happens, folks. Don't laugh. Don't think it won't be happening. Don't think it won't be you. It happens. Be prepared. Do the best you can with what you have. Well, I don't got my special response truck here. I don't got my SWAT unit. I don't got my SWAT team here, guys. I can't contain it. Yes, you can. And here's how. Regardless of the size of your containment area, regardless if you're the only one there, you can restrict access to the area. Use what you have to the best of your ability. Close doors if possible. Set up roadblocks, if possible. Set up barriers. Let's say you're trying to block off the entrance to a store where a robbery, a shooting, a stabbing has just occurred. You don't have crime scene tape. That's okay. You know what works really well? Chairs, shopping carts, strollers that you get in the mall. Put them in the doorway. Set up a restricted area. Keep people out. Don't let people in. Don't let any employees out. Don't let anybody in. That's called containment. Until police get there, once law enforcement's on the scene, they've got the scene. You're turning over control. This is all yours, guys. You can use a variety of things to set up the perimeter, to set up blockades, to set up roadblocks. If it's a small area, all you need is you. If you're a big guy like I am, use your body. Hey, back off. You ain't getting in there, Joe. Do the very best you can to contain the area. Well, you mentioned, don't let nobody out. I got 18 employees in this store, and they got to get out because somebody's been stabbed. I got 18 employees in this bar room here, and they all want to go home. They can't go home. They can't leave. They're part of the crime scene. Law enforcement's going to want to question them, possibly detain them. CSI may want to check their clothes, may want to check their skin, their nails. There may be, you know, reason to detain them. I don't think that's legal. Yes, it is. You can detain people in a crime scene. So, step three, containment. Nobody in, nobody out. Barricade as well as you can. Like I said, use what's available to you. I've moved desks many times to block the door, throw some chairs in the doorway, depending on where you're located, shopping carts, strollers, even people. I've grabbed some people at times and I've said, hey, do me a favor, stand right there. Tell people they can't go in there. I'll be right back. Use what you have available to you at the time. Step four, again, let no one in, let no one out. No one in, no one out. This is scene containment. Don't touch anything if possible. Don't remove anything. Do not remove anything. Well, that right there needs to be, no, it don't need to be nothing. Well, somebody might trip over that, too bad. Don't let them in and they won't fall. Do not smoke, do not eat, and do not drink in the perimeter inside the crime scene. Well, I'm a smoker and I need a smoke break. I don't care. Don't smoke at the crime scene. Don't eat at the crime scene. You're going to contaminate it. Well, I had me a piece of gum and I threw the wrapper over there and I guess that's contaminated. Saying, yes, it has. Don't throw anything in the garbage. Don't discard anything and don't pick up anything. And I'm going to tell you this. Listen up. Don't be there in the middle of the mall where there's been a serious violent crime, a robbery, and you got a crime scene, even if you're just there standing around waiting for police, letting people, telling them to go on and kind of got that area cordoned off. Don't be playing around. Don't be joking. Don't be acting stupid. Stupid? Don't do it. Well, police don't respect me no how. Exactly why. Be professional. Act professional, as you should any time that you're in public, anytime you're on duty, anytime you're in uniform, anytime you got the badge on. Don't act ridiculous. You want to be treated professional? Act professional. Look professional. Talk professional. Be professional. It's very, very simple. This is serious business. Treat it like serious business. Remember, we're not CSI. We're not there to investigate. We're not there to take a bunch of pictures. We're not there to take prints. We're not there to do any of that. However, let me just say this. If you do snap some pictures because you're moving things around, don't share that with the media. Don't give that to friends. Don't post it on social networks. Don't put it on your Facebook. Don't send it over to MySpace. First of all, you could jeopardize the case. Second of all, it may be illegal. Yeah, it could be illegal. You could be charged with tampering with evidence. Don't take anything. Don't do anything ridiculous. Step five. Very important. Once you've got containment, now observe and report. Now you need to take some notes. I don't know how many times I've written on my hand. I don't know how many times I've written on my arm. Don't have a notepad. You should always carry notepads or a little cassette recorder. But We're not always prepared, even the best of us, so I've written on my hand hundreds of times, on my arm, even on a shirt sleeve, numerous times. Observe and report. Take notes. What time were you dispatched to the call? What time did you arrive? What did you see? What did you hear? What did you smell? What did you touch when you arrived? Did you see a suspect? Was there any interaction with a suspect? Did you take him into custody? Did you try to take him into custody? Did you wrestle with anyone? Was there blood on the ground? Was there blood on the counter? Was the victim laid out dead, half dead, sitting, slumped over? Did they just have a minor cut? What did you smell? It smelled like alcohol. Maybe somebody's been drinking. That's important stuff, folks. And what did you touch? Well, coming in, I touched the door. I touched the counter. I touched the phone. Make a note. A lot of times when you contaminate a scene like that, you're giving a lot of extra work to the CSIs, to the crime scene investigators, because what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to print everyone who went into the crime scene, including you, to rule out your print. When they gather a bunch of prints, they have to print everybody who contaminated the scene so they can eliminate you. So don't be surprised if they want your prints. Don't be surprised if they want your DNA. Huh? Why do they want that? Well, if you threw a cigarette on the ground and they've collected that as part of their evidence, they're going to want your DNA so that they can rule you out, so that they know that cigarette came from you and not a suspect. Oh, okay. Your notes should also include the condition of the doors when you made entry, if it's a building, the windows, and even what the lighting of the area was, both natural and man-made. That's very important if you get called to testify, so that they know that there was appropriate light for you to recognize all the things you say that you saw. So step five, it's very important. Here's where you get into observing and reporting, taking notes. Remember, the time that you were dispatched, the time that you arrived, what did you see? What did you hear? What did you smell? What did you touch? Did you take any steps toward apprehending a suspect or anything of that nature? And just record everything that you did, step by step by step by step by step, accounting from the time that you arrived until the time the law enforcement got on scene. If there's any odors, please notate those. If there's any signs of other activity, notate those. Notate what EMS and fire personnel have done and if they've altered the scene. If they've done anything to the scene in any way, make notes. Anything essential about the suspect, description, statements that they made, physical condition, mental condition, intoxication, notate all that stuff. Anything that's essential about the victim, do the same. Also, this is where you record witness names, people who are hanging around, maybe employees who were on scene at the time. Record their names and other information, including contact, phone numbers, people that may have entered the scene after you told them not to. Take down their information. Who are you? Get some identification from them. And always separate witnesses and possible suspects. Don't discuss the events or the crime with witnesses or bystanders. And let me give you another clue. Let me give you another piece of the puzzle. If you're a very good listener, if you're attentive, if you do it discreetly, oftentimes you're going to hear somebody that you got detained give you some key pieces of evidence. They saw something, they heard something, or maybe they even did something. notate it down. Step six, you're going to release the scene to the police department only. You're not going to release it to the client. Yeah, you can go now. No, this is a rape. This is a homicide. This is a stabbing. I'm sorry, sir. I can't even let you into the crime scene until police get here. Well, I'm your boss. Well, I understand that, but you've hired me to do a job. You've hired me to uphold the law, and that's what I have to do. Do not release the scene to the fire department or the EMS, Emergency Medical Service. They can get in there and they can do their job, but don't release it. Don't think, oh, the fire department's here, I can take off now. No, you're responsible for scene security. You, not them. They have a separate role. They have a separate duty, a separate job. They don't have time to be in charge of securing the scene. When the police department get there, now you release it. Hey, officers, this is what happened. This is what I saw. This is what I got. I've taken some notes. Here you go. Make sure that you notate in your report, in your incident report that you're going to write, correct? Make sure that you notate the time that you turn the scene over to the police and the officer's name. Most police officers do not have badge numbers anymore, but if they do, their badge number. They may ask you to continue securing the door. I've had a number of times they've said, please stand outside, don't let nobody in. Sure, no problem. They may even help you, ask you to help them in a search for evidence in the area. They may say, can you come out and check out the back dumpsters or show us where the hallways lead to and so on and so forth. You may be involved in that aspect of the scene security. Six steps that private security really does have and should do in an actual crime scene or a serious injury where an employee has been seriously injured or killed, or a fire, something that's going to be investigated by OSHA or the fire marshal's office, or something that's very serious that I'm sure and you should be sure that needs serious investigation, treated like a crime scene. In my wrap-up tonight, this is really something that every department, every agency, every proprietary security staff should already have in their manual, already document. You should have a written policy with the primary responsibilities of all initial responders to the crime scene are, which are to preserve the life and to control suspects and witnesses, and then to focus on securing the scene. You should have an outlined written policy, step by step, of what your department's interaction is and what their duties, procedures of the crime scene is. There are six steps. Like I said, sometimes you don't do them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It might be 2, 1, 5, 4, 6. Depends. Every situation is going to be different. Be sure to have a written policy. Even practice it. Set up some bogus, fake crime scenes. Practice, practice, practice. Train, train, drill. It is important that you get this right. Oftentimes, private security officers arrive long before police, fire, EMS. They have to know what to do, folks. You've got to know what to do. If you're the responding officer, you need to know what your obligations to your client, to the patrons, to the employees of that property. You have to know what your responsibilities are and your duties. You also need to know what the consequences are if you don't do your job correctly, because there are consequences in everything that we do. Whether you realize it or not, there are many, many consequences. Remember, in a crime scene situation, we're there to provide crime scene security. We're there to sub-containment and security. We're not there to investigate the crime necessarily. We're not there to take evidence. We're not there to be CSI. However, a footnote. I hesitate to throw this out there because I know there's people out there that's going to disregard everything I just said and only concentrate on this last statement. But there are times when I've been involved in crime scenes where our security staff took secondary pictures and evidence for our case file. We took photos. We took other evidence after police was done. Not before. We don't kick them off the property, go, oh, we got this. We'll handle it. We're good. It don't work like that. When a crime occurs, especially a felony, law enforcement has control of the scene. But afterwards, if your department wants to keep photos of the scene or other drawings or renderings or other things, that's fine. It's fine. But remember those six steps very, very quickly. Let me tell you the six steps. You want to make sure that you do the scene size up. You know what you're getting into and get the appropriate personnel there. You want to take the custody and the suspect into custody if possible. Render aid to the victims if possible. Don't worry about the scene. Do those things first. Then you have to set up containment. Don't let anybody in, nobody out. Make sure you don't touch nothing. Don't remove anything. Don't smoke, eat, don't drink, and act professional. Don't be a clown. That's not the place to be a clown. Be a clown at home. Remember that you have to observe and report, take notes, time that you were dispatched, time that you arrived, what you did, what you saw, what you smelled, step-by-step accounting. Make sure that you release the scene only to the appropriate law enforcement personnel if it's a crime scene. If it's not a crime scene, you could probably release it to the client. It depends. You may release it to a fire marshal. A fire marshal in most jurisdictions is considered a public safety or a law enforcement officer. I hope that you've been listening. You've taken some good notes tonight. This is a very necessary subject. It's something that you're definitely going to get involved in if you haven't already. Well, that wraps up another program for the Private Officer Talk Radio. We appreciate you being here. I'm sorry that I wasn't able to pick up a couple of inbound calls. We'll certainly find out what's going on with that. But join us here Sunday for our next program. As always, we'll have an interesting topic. We hope to have some guests in the next few segments with us. And remember, you can be a co-host. You can be a guest co-host simply by sending us an email at radio@privateofficer.com. radio@privateofficer.com. Make sure you have your subject researched, that you know what it is you want to talk about, that you've got some good information, and we'll be glad to have you. We'll be glad to have you also join us on the LP Zone, which is coming up. We'll probably be kicking that off in about 3 weeks. But in the meantime, thanks for joining us tonight. We hope that you are safe, secure, blessed, and that you're back here on Sunday. Until then, we'll see you the next time, right here on the radio.
Seconds.